Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us on the podcast is the head basketball coach of the Bedford Academy varsity program, Mr. Rob Phelps. Welcome, sir.
What's up, my brother? Pleasure to be here.
Your basketball resume is much realer than that, but we're going to start with you are the head varsity basketball coach of the Bedford Academy Panthers. Coach, I want to talk to you about what I believe is the signature of your program. Well, two things. First, the tough man-to-man defense.
Yes.
Is that fair to say that that is the staple and the backbone of what you guys do over there?
Most definitely. You got to be able to play defense. And, you know, I coached against you. You've seen us play. If you don't play defense, you're not going to play. You know, you got to get after it defensively. That's just been our staple for years.
When did you make up your mind that, you know what, my guys are just going to play man?
It's been like that ever since I first had the job at Bedford. I first got the job in 2010. And that's always been a staple of mine, of, you know, where I've come from, just playing at Providence and also playing for Coach Gustis. We've always been a defensive type man-to-man team. So I've always been that way. I mean, we do play some zone, but not often. It's mostly we're going to just get after you, pressure you. And man-to-man is hard to do because you have to teach. A zone, you could just, you know, it moves space side to side. But when you play man-to-man, you really have to teach it. And I enjoy it.
Let's talk about that, Coach. Teaching.
Yes.
You know, I most recently saw you guys at the Hearst Classic.
Yeah.
You know, we were getting ready to play our game, but I kept peeking in that gym. And I just saw tough, in-your-face defense. And for those who don't know, they may watch the NBA. Well, of course, people are lined up man-to-man. That's not the case at the high school level, the AAU level. Right. You know, guys can use zone and stuff because it is so difficult to teach.
Yes.
Sometimes you have a kid and he's saying, Coach, I'm guarding my man, but the ball is on its way to the basket to be scored. You may have to help your teammate. So, Coach, talk to me about teaching the man-to-man defense.
Well, basically, what we emphasize, I don't want to give up all my secrets.
No, you ain't got to give it all up.
But we emphasize really just forcing, trying to cut the court off in half. Mm-hmm. So if the ball is on the left side of the court, we want to basically keep it to the left side of the court. Mm-hmm. We don't want the ball coming over to the other side of the court. And if it happens to get on the other side of the court, it better stay over there. Don't let it get back because we're setting up for our rotations. We don't have a big team, so we're not going to be blocking a lot of shots. So we're forcing guys to the sideline to try to get a five-second count or to force them to the help and try to pick up charges. Mm-hmm. But people that know Bedford, they know that's our philosophy because they're going to tell them, yo, you got to watch out because they're going to take charges.
For sure.
So that's our whole basis of what we're trying to do. Either get a five-second count by pressuring the ball or make the guy turn the ball over, just throw it away.
Right.
That counts. Get a deflection. That counts. And getting charges. That counts.
For sure.
We have like a little system. And I praise the guys. Like, I remember one game we played. I told the guy, don't give the MVP to the high scorer. I wanted to give it to a defensive guy because he did such a great job defensively. Because, you know, most of the tournaments, oh, he was the highest scorer.
Right.
And I told him, nah, give it to this guy because defensively he did exactly what I want. That's our MVP.
Yeah. Because kids, you know, they're glued to their man. They're like, well, coach, I'm guarding my man. And I get frustrated because technically you're right, but dog, the first priority is guarding your basket. You know, your teammate might have gotten beat. Now we need you to slide over and switch.
Yeah, but that's the weak side help principles.
Yeah.
So we teach weak side help principles that you shouldn't, if the ball is on this side, you should not be on the side hugging your man opposite the ball. You should be in the paint or a foot in the paint so you're able to rotate over. And that's what we teach. So even if the guy get beat sometimes, because sometimes you may have a very special offensive player that's just going to beat you, your teammate should be there to help you. So if that guy is not in help, I'm not really getting on the guy that's getting beat. I'm getting on the helper.
Right.
You know, and sometimes people say, yo, why is he yelling? What is he screaming?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know defense and they don't understand our principles.
For sure.
So that's kind of what it is. It's everything. You got to have that weak side help and all those principles. And once again, that's stuff you have to teach, and you got to go over it over and over and over again.
Over and over again.
Yes.
And another piece to that man defense is the communication.
Oh, you got to talk, you know, because people are gonna get beat. It's just gonna happen. You're gonna get beat, so you have to communicate.
How do you implore those young men to open their mouth?
It's hard, trust me, because you know the era that we live in. Kids don't really talk.
Yeah.
They talk with their thumbs and their fingers. They're texting and doing all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. So the way I do it is that if you're not going to talk and communicate, I know a way to make you communicate is we can line up, get on that baseline, and we can run.
Right.
So what I do is that if guys don't want to talk,
we
just get on that baseline, and eventually they'll start talking.
They'll
start talking.
That's what's up, man. Because it's really impressive to watch. Another part of that man-to-man defense is you being animated on that sideline, coach.
Yeah, it's tough because a lot of these kids today, they want to play so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to play with that intensity and passion. But they want to play with intensity and passion when they're scoring or shooting. So I told them, you got to have that same intensity on the defensive end.
Yeah.
Because they got to understand, if you want to get recruited, this is a whole another area. If you want to get looks, you gotta play defense, because the kids don't understand. When you go to college, they already got their offensive players.
For sure.
They need other guys to play a different role, and you got to be able to do that. And the best way to get on the court is be able to play defense.
Yeah, yeah. You like another factor on that sideline, like you up there animated. It's like a sixth defender. How conscious are you of that? Is that gamemanship, or that's just who you are naturally?
That's who I am naturally. Because I have people come into the game, and they say, "Coach, I'm watching you."
Yeah.
And I'm really not, I'm just coaching, you know. I'm really not trying to, you know, be the face or whatever. Yeah. I'm just coaching because I'm really passionate and I love the game. I was the same way as a player.
Yeah.
I really got after it as a player, but I'm just bringing that energy to my kids, to be honest. That's all I'm really doing, because sometimes the energy has to come from me. I can't do it, but so much. If you hear my voice now, it's like it wears on you, you know. So, you know, every now and then, you know, I have to sit down, and they're going to have to figure it out and do it, because, you know, I can't keep doing it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to come from them.
Coach, you were a tough player yourself. You played at a high level. You know, you're one of the leading scorers in New York State high school basketball history.
Mm-hmm.
We used to get busy at Nazareth.
Right.
Earning yourself a scholarship to Providence.
Yes.
1994, your squad won the Big East championship.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Take me through it, coach. What was that day like?
A lot of pros on that team, man. You know, a lot of pros in that championship game.
Yes. It was you guys versus Georgetown.
Yeah, us against Georgetown. But here's the crazy thing. We played UConn. They had about 6 or 7 pros on that team.
Let's talk about him.
And
Daniel Marshall,
Ray Allen, Donnie Marshall, who was a pro, Travis Knight, who was a pro. Jesus, who else am I missing?
Kevin Ollie.
It was so many. Kevin Ollie was a pro. That's five. That was the semifinal game.
Yeah.
People don't realize that we beat UConn, and they were number 2 in the country at that time.
Yeah.
And people thought UConn was going to just roll over us, and it was going to be UConn and Georgetown. But that was a big upset for us. But people don't realize, on my team, we had a bunch of pros.
Yeah.
We had Eric Williams, who played with the Boston Celtics.
Yep.
We had Dickie Simpkins, who played with the Chicago Bulls. We had Austin Crochier, who was a freshman, who played with the Indiana Pacers.
Yes, sir.
And then we had Michael Smith, who played with the Washington Wizards, got drafted by the Wizards.
Okay.
But then we had guys on the bench that people didn't know about, who's one of my best buddies, Troy Brown, who got drafted by the Atlanta Hawks. People don't even know who that is, but he was a pro. And that's 5 pros, right? So just on those 2 teams, that's 10 NBA guys.
Yes.
Forget the guys that played, like, you know, I played overseas. I played for 12 years overseas.
Yeah.
So you're playing against a bunch of pros, and that's just the semifinal game.
Because
then when we played Georgetown, they had Othella Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
The Junkyard Dog.
Jerome Williams.
That's 3 or 4 pros right there. Mm-hmm. Then Robert Churchwell, who played with me overseas. He was a pro.
Mm-hmm.
So you're playing against pros, man. And the level of intensity that you have to play with. But we took out a great team, man.
I
have to run around after Ray Allen. Ray Allen was a bucket. You know what I'm saying? And I had to run and chase that guy. But the great thing about that, And if me and Ray ever, we talk periodically, he was like, yo, Rob, man, you was on fire, man. We couldn't stop you. It was one of those things where we were just determined.
Coach, you went 10 for 11 that day.
Yeah.
How many points did you end up with?
I think 24, 25, something like that.
So you was doing a little bit more than just chasing Ray Allen. You were a force on your end.
Yeah.
Also.
Oh, yeah.
What was that day like? What, were you in a zone or something? 10 for 11 in Big East tournament?
That whole tournament I was in a zone because it was just, you know, coming home, you know, being away, coming home, you know, the family can come out and see you and support you. It was just, you know, one of those weekends where it was just one of those days, man. Yeah. You know, you get in that zone that the basket looked, you know, so big. And I always tell my guys, you know, you got a lot of shot takers, but you got to be a shot maker. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to shoot the ball, but you got to put the ball in a hole.
Yes, sir.
This ain't just a free-for-all. You got to be able to score buckets. Mm-hmm. And I tell that to guys all the time, and they wonder why we have certain plays for certain guys to score, because that's what he can do. When you're playing structured basketball, you got to be able to play your role and be a star at your role, no matter what it is. And that's what a lot of kids are missing. Everybody think they just want to be a scorer, scorer, scorer. You got to be a star in your role.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. The championship day, I think it was Dickie Simpkins. I saw it was an interview. And he said, your coach is trying to run plays in different directions or something. They're like, nah, we're going to Rob.
Oh, yeah. I tell that story. So even when I'm coaching, I even tell the guys, sometimes you might see something on the court and go away from it. And me and Dickie, we still talk all the time. He works for Fox right now. We talk all the time. And he says every now and then he just throw the tape in. Because I remember Dickie, it was a tri-captain. I was a captain, Dickie was a captain, and Michael Smith was a captain. Okay. And Coach Barnes had things that he wanted to do. He's the head coach at Tennessee right now. And I was hot. And my teammates knew that I was hot. And they just got me the ball. And my point guard got me the ball. And if that's working, what is your coach going to say? Oh, no, why are you doing that? He's, as a good coach, supposedly, he just sat back and let it ride. And we just won that. You know, coach was coaching, but he did a good job of being a good coach. He sat back and let us do what we do.
Let the players do what they do.
Yep.
Providence, that was the first Big East championship in the school's history.
Yes.
You beat UConn, who was ranked number 2 in the country at that time?
At that time, yes.
That's a big-time win for you guys in the program. How did you kind of refocus and not get hung up on that victory and still be able to put the championship together?
Great question. Because in the beginning of the year, a lot of people don't know this, Coach Barnes said that we were going to win the Big East championship because we had the talent to do it. He said that in the beginning of the year. And all coaches say that.
Right.
Right. But he really meant that. And they put, if I recall, he had a blank place where we could put the trophy.
Okay.
And that was there all year.
Like in a facility?
Yeah. It was there, like a blank spot. He said, that's where we're putting the trophy. It's a true story. To this day, that trophy, I mean, they redid the facilities, but for years, that trophy was right there where he put the blank spot for the championship trophy. Big gold trophy. You know, they give some nice stuff at the Big East. And now they revamped the place. But when you go up there, whenever I go up there, it still says the first. We're the first to do it. And, you know, to this day, when we go up there, we get treated like, you know, like rock stars. They still love us to this day. And I tell people all the time, if you get a chance to play at that level, enjoy it. Because if you go there and you win, you're going to be immortalized forever. You like, to this day, it's whatever, you know.
Yeah. Coach Barnes issued that challenge beginning of the year.
Yes.
And this is something that was on you guys' mind the whole year.
Yeah. So, to answer your question, we were thinking about that. We did that, and it was business next thing. It wasn't – nobody celebrated. Now, think about it. I'm home in New York. I could be in Club Envy, you know, all those spots. I could have been doing that. Nah, it was right back to business. We ate. I chilled with my family a little bit. And then after that, right back on the bus, went back to the hotel and just chilled out. It was no partying. It was no hanging out. It wasn't no whatever. We went back to the hotel room. We had our room service. Ate, and chilled in the room. I'm talking about we right in the middle of the city. We could have been out partying.
Your home.
My home, you know, everybody. My phone was off. Don't call me.
Yeah.
Wasn't nobody calling me. Wasn't no hanging out. No, nothing in the lobby. The only hanging out we did, that was after with the family right there chilling out. All my friends, buddies that was there. And I got back on the bus. Yo, we good. Don't leave me alone.
Still a business.
So we still was ready for it. That was the key. It was business. Yeah. It wasn't no, oh, we beat. Okay, we did that. Mm-hmm. On to the next game. And it was just a focus that we had.
Yeah. With championship seasons, there's a lot of ups and downs and stuff. Coach, what was the toughest part of that year for the Providence Friars? That UConn team, you guys fell to them twice in the regular season?
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, you did your research. And they were all close games.
Yeah.
They beat us. It's hard to beat a team three times.
Yes, sir.
That's another thing. They beat us by a couple points at Stores, mm-hmm. and they beat us by one. And I remember that Kevin Ollie scored a bucket on me, a layup. It's on the video. You can look on me. I was pissed. A layup. We had the game. And it was just like one of the get back. It's very hard to beat a team three times. Mm-hmm. And we just rolled through it. I remember we rolled through Villanova, beat Kerry Kittles and them. Man, Kerry Kittles, that's my guy. Kerry Kittles and them at Villanova. And then we, like I said, took out UConn and we just rolled through Georgetown. And when I say rolled through, there wasn't blowouts. It's just that we were so focused on what we wanted to do. And that's what I mean, rolled through. We were so on a mission to do that. So, those were tough teams, man. That era was tough. Mm-hmm. That was very tough.
Was there anything off the court that distracted you or your teammates throughout that year that you guys had to fight through or anything? Or
we weren't guys like that got in trouble. We weren't those kind of guys. Nobody really got in trouble. We didn't have academic issues. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, did their work. No on the court issues. Mm-hmm. But what I tell people all the time. Our practices, you know how many fights we had in practice? I'm talking about with each other.
Of course.
And I was telling this to my team the other day. I said, yo, man, when y'all gonna really get after it? Like, everybody's too nice. That championship team, Dickie's my best friend. We had fights.
Yeah.
Michael Smith, who's Animal. Y'all, if people don't know who he was, fights.
Yeah.
We had fights in practice, straight up brawls, like, bap, bap, bap. But we're all great friends, but that's why we were champions fight.
Yeah,
I don't care what nobody say. If you, I ain't never seen no nice team win.
Yeah.
We can go down the list. Golden State, who they got? Draymond Green, a fighter.
For sure.
And he's going to get after it. Michael Jordan was a leader. Hey, Rodman, fighters. You going down the league. You want to be a champion, you're going to have to go through some wars. So we fought a lot, but we were champions at the end.
That competitive fight.
But it wasn't no dislike. To this day, we're all great. We got team chats and all that. We all talk, FaceTime each other. Do our alumni weekends, and we laugh about it. Yo, you remember when I punched you in the face? Yo, you remember when I yoke you up? Yo, it happens.
How did Rick Barnes, your coach, respond to these dust-ups in practice?
He would say it like this. Y'all ain't going to do nothing. Y'all ain't going to fight. Yeah. Then when he seen it getting serious, you know, like, because but that's normal. It's just a part of it. Yeah. It's a part of being a champion. You got to go through wars, and that's what it was.
Coach, you played in the Big East, Golden Era.
Yeah.
You already mentioned pros, Kerry Kittles, Donnie Marshall, Ray Allen. Your coach, Rick Barnes, would end up coaching at Texas.
Yep.
This is the man Kevin Durant played for.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Fran Fraschilla, your assistant coach.
My guy.
He's on ESPN every draft year.
Yeah.
This was an amazing era.
Yeah.
Who are some of the other people you played against over your 3 years in the Big East?
Oh, man, it was... Of course, my boy Adrian Autry, you know, Conrad McCray, you know, rest in peace, Conrad.
Conrad McCray, Brooklyn Tech grad, John, played at Syracuse.
Yeah, John Wallace.
Syracuse.
Then you go to Brooklyn, I'm about to say Brooklyn Collegiate. You had Boston College.
Yeah.
My great friend Malcolm Huckabee, Howard Eisley. That backcourt was crazy.
Wow.
Very, very good. Seton Hall, you had Terry DeHair.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, those guys was... I mean, it's so many St. John's. They had Lamont Middleton, Chanel Scott, Malik Sealy. I can go on. This is how it was, man.
Yeah.
Every team had about three or four pros on it. So you had to come to war. It was no days off. And it was serious business. And we're friends to this day. I see Chanel to this day. We best buddies. We hang out. But if we were on that court, I'm going to take him out. He would do the same to me and vice versa. Me and Red are tight, but I would knock Red out. to win that game. Red Autry.
Okay.
He was at Syracuse.
Yeah.
I mean, we all buddies to this day. But they all tell you to do what we have to do because we all had a common goal. We all think about it. All of us wanted to be in the pros.
Yes,
all of us wanted to be NBA players. Mm-hmm. So you had to do whatever you had to do. But it's still love to this day, mm-hmm. and that got us better. Mm-hmm. That's what's missing today. Kids today is too much laughing, giggle, hee-hee, social media nonsense. Yeah. And they don't compete. You can compete and get at the people and still be buddies later.
For sure.
So to me, that's what's missing in this era of basketball, New York City basketball, what I see. Because I don't see the other stuff. I'm only seeing talking about what I see in New York City. Guys don't really compete, mm-hmm. you know, on a daily basis.
Daily basis, you know, getting after.
Yeah, every day.
Salute to Sean L. Scott. You say he played at, what's that, St. John's?
St. John's.
He's working in the PSAL, too.
Yes,
at John Jay, man.
Yes.
It's great to have gentlemen like you with that great basketball history bring it back to the city. We mentioned all these pros. Coach, how close did you come to living an NBA lifestyle, getting a roster spot?
Yes, very, very close. I was the last cut of the Dallas Mavericks.
What year are we talking? 95 after school?
No, not after school, because I went overseas for a while and got better and got better and got better. And this is probably maybe 99, 2000. I went to Dallas Mavericks tryout camp. Mm-hmm. Did very, very well, extremely well. Made last cut. The person that actually took my spot is Jaren Jackson's father.
Okay.
What's his name? He played at Georgetown. But his dad, he played with the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, Jaren Jackson.
He actually took my spot.
Wow.
Because he was a veteran, been in the league for a while. Nothing that I didn't do, it's just that they wanted a veteran. Mm-hmm. And those are, I'm not going to say the politics, that's the business. That's just a part of it. But I did everything that I needed to do, which was a great thing because me making last cut, that just put my value up for overseas, just took my money up.
Yeah.
So once you go over there and you have that kind of resume, you're going to get paid. So
how disappointing was that for you?
It was disappointing, but it didn't. I wasn't like, oh my God, what, you know? I wasn't like that. I was disappointed. I was close, but listen, I had, you know, I said, you know, I got some opportunities over here. Look, this money. So I went over there and made money and did well for myself. So, but it wasn't like I was detrimental going crazy over there.
Gotcha.
No, it was nothing like that.
Yeah. I'm thinking like maybe when you see your teammates playing, Austin Crochet, you see Dickie Simpkins winning championships with Jordan, you know, that can be challenging for a young man.
I was happy for them. Yeah. But you know why? Because I was right there with them. I was right there on the phone with Dickie after he win, or I would, when they come into town, I go, generally happy, you know, for my guys. Those, I felt a part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, I used to feed you the ball. I helped you get that. So, you know, I was happy for my guys. It was nothing. All my guys, Austin, Dickie, Mike, Eric, all these guys, those are my guys. I'm happy for them, you know, to this day. And they'll do anything for me, I'll do anything for them, you know. And, I was pleased for them. But I still had to live my life.
For sure.
You know, so I was making a life for myself.
You played 3 years at Providence?
Yes, 3 years. My first year, I was Prop 48.
What's that, Coach?
Okay, so Prop 48 is, and this is why I get on guys about academics.
Okay.
So Prop 48 is basically meaning that you didn't get a certain score in the SAT.
Okay.
The way it was back then, if you didn't get I think it was a 750 or whatever it was, I didn't make it by one question. Mm-hmm. One question. So I had to sit out. Basically, that's called a non-qualifier.
Right.
I was good academically for my high school grades, but I didn't get a certain score I needed for the SAT. So this is why I'm so hard on my guys academically. So I had to, basically almost like a red shirt year.
Right, right.
So I basically redshirted, and then I came back for the next 3 years. But I was there at Providence taking care of my academics, doing what I had to do. And then once I finished my academics, I was ready for my sophomore year.
But what I understood about redshirt, okay, you may be on campus that first year, working on your academics, you don't play.
Right.
But eventually, you will get to play 4 years of college basketball.
Back then, they didn't have that. That rule was changed. I wish they would have had that rule back then. Back then, you lose a year.
Wow.
Totally lost, So I actually lost a year. And I was good academically there.
Right.
I just had a problem with taking that test. That SAT test was, you know, I wasn't a great test taker.
Right.
But I could do all my schoolwork, but I wasn't a great test taker. That was kind of test. It was long, 3-4 hours. I was like, yo, I'm tired of this. But I missed it by one question. One question.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how it was back then. Now you can get the year back because they changed the rule.
Okay.
They changed the rule. So you can get the year back. Yep.
Which leads me to another staple of the Bedford Academy program.
Yes.
To participate in high school sports, you need maybe a 68 average, something like that. 65?
Yeah, 65.
To play for Bedford, what GPA do you need? You
must have an 80 GPA. I'll say it again. You must have an 80 GPA.
Now, Coach, I understand setting a standard, but many would fear that they would lose out on quality basketball players setting a standard that high at 80 points.
I do. I've missed out on quite a few. They love our style of play. They love my coaching. And I even have parents say, I don't know about that 80, Coach. And this is a true story. I have plenty of parents come to me and say, Coach, I don't know about it. And which I respect. They know their child.
Right.
But let's be honest. You're not getting to college with a 65.
Yes, sir.
It ain't going to happen. You may can go to a junior college and, you know, but a Power Five, top schools, D2s, even high D3s, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're not getting in. Let's be real. It's not going
to
happen.
When did you make that decision?
Well, we used to have it at 75. It used to be 75. Mm-hmm. Still not a 65, but right? It used to be a 75. About 5 years ago, my principal said, yo, listen, 80. I said, no problem. 80. And I was actually going to bring, I have it in my car, I was going to bring you our report cards.
Wow.
And let you see them. And let you see. Now, these kids is taking trigonometry, geometry, AP courses. Some kids are taking 2 and 3 AP courses. Mm-hmm. It's real. And they got to sign a contract. The parents got to sign a contract as well. If you don't reach the 80 GPA, you're not playing. Now, let's say this. If I have a kid that's busting his butt, doing everything he's supposed to do, and he falls short of that 80. Say he gets a 76. Mm-hmm. But that teacher vouches for him and say, Coach Phelps, he's been all the tutoring. He's done everything I asked him to do. He's handed all his work in. He's been on time. He's really doing well. He just, you know, the 80 is a benchmark. It's a number.
Right.
But if falls short and that teacher vouches for him, I'm going to let him play. So the 80 is a benchmark.
Right.
Now, we get a kid, and it's a true story. I lost the championship game. Remember, I won the championship in 2010, and I've been to the final or semifinal for years.
Yes.
I've set kids because they didn't get the 80. And I'm going to tell you why. Because they didn't hand their work in. They were late to class. I have a first period rule. If you're late to your first period, you ain't going to play. Mm. Got to be on time. So it's a lot of rules and dynamics that you have to have just to be, because this basketball thing is not going to last. It's a life thing. What are you going to do when this basketball thing is over and you go get a job and you just come walking in late? It's a problem.
It's a problem. A few things, Coach.
Yes.
And to back you up, I was reading an article. I think it was your second year. You sat snag and best.
Yes.
Now, in a playoff game.
But listen to this, though. Listen to this. They had the 80. Well, Sean didn't have the 80. Best, guess what his mother wanted? An 85. His mother made me sit him.
Wow.
This is what, and I'm trying to tell them, I'm revolt. I'm like, but he got the 80. And the mother said, this is my house rule. And guess what? That kid right now, guess what he's doing? Best, he's a math teacher.
Wow.
He's a math teacher right now. And me and him, when we meet, talk to this day. And he remembered that. He said, Coach, we could have won that championship. I said, well, you should have got that 85 like your mother said.
Yeah.
But I'm going to argue with that mother when I have an 80 benchmark.
Right.
And he didn't meet the benchmark that his mother said, which was an 85. So I had to sit Sean Snag, who was our highest scorer, and then my top rebounder I had to sit to. That was in the championship game. And we lost that game by 3 points. I remember this to this day. It was against Long Island City.
Yeah. Do the other kids get frustrated with you, Coach? Like, come on, Coach.
All the time. All the time. But I tell them, it's 2 things you can do. You can buy in and work your butt off. Or, like I've had kids before, they transfer or they leave.
That's a tough spot for you to be in. Championship game. The school's counting on you. The players are counting on you. Their families are counting on you to deliver this championship. And you were able to stand pat.
It's been like that for years. Mm-hmm. I tell the people all the time, these are our rules. We may not win on the basketball court sometime. But over the years, we went in life mm-hmm. with these kids because all my kids are successful. Mm-hmm. I had one tragic, one guy. You always get one. When you're dealing with a big population, you're always going to deal with some issues. But he graduated high school.
Right.
I got 100% graduation rate. All my kids graduate, every single one. And I got about a 95. 95 to 98 where all my kids get into college. They all get in and do well and graduate and do well. And I have one kid that just, you know, that fell to the wayside. You know, I don't want to say his name or anything like that, but we have one kid that kind of fell to the wayside. And it just happens. When you're dealing with a big population, you're going to have, Princeton have issues.
Yeah.
Howard has issues. Every school has issues when you're dealing with things. So that's not too bad. I'm 16 years in and only have one kid.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good.
For sure. It's interesting. You said you had the parents sign a contract too.
Oh, yes.
We all in this
together. Yeah, so everybody's all in. The parents know. Because trust me, some parents say, oh, I didn't know anything about this. No, no, here's the paperwork. Look at it. Understand it. This is what's going on. And I tell parents, one thing about me, I'm very consistent. People that know me, I'm very, very consistent. You know, like overwhelming. I'm very just like that. So, yeah, the parents know this is what has to be done. And the parents that's really serious about it, I have no issues. They love it.
Coach, I did a segment the other day, and I was talking about, people always talk about how can they get in a podcast, and I said the number one thing is your reputation.
Yes.
What is said about you when you're not present.
Right.
And these are the stories that are circulating about you and your program, Coach.
Yeah.
You know, it's documented in New York Post articles, your graduation rate, the kids you put in college, and there's a young man you have on your team this year who played AAU basketball for us years ago. Right. Amazing young man. His family is amazing. He went, I believe, the charter school route or something. His mom wanted him in that school for academics reasons. But he wanted to come compete in the PSAL.
Right.
And this year I learned that he was competing for you. And when I saw mom, I know she was still a little unsure about it. I said, Mom, you couldn't have picked a better place.
You sure did say that. I remember when you said that. You said he's with Phelps. Thumbs up. You got a good place. And that kid is doing great right now.
He looked like one of y'all.
Yeah, he's doing great, man. He's doing great.
He looked like one of y'all indeed, Phelps. He's fitting right in.
Yeah.
But I told him, I said, Ma, you ain't got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
He's in the right place. But, Coach, you do have success on the court.
Yeah, we do. We win. I mean, but to, like I tell people all the time, if you do things the right way and you're consistent with your message and what you're doing with these kids, you're gonna get your share of wins. And I have my share of losses as well. It's all a part of the business, all a part of the game. But if you're consistent and you're preaching the same message all the time, you'll be fine. Some people are not consistent. This is why they have different issues, because they're not consistent in what they're doing. I'm very consistent on what I do, and I'm very serious about it. Because if you don't do it, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. It's not going to work. Trust me. I've had guys that came with me. This is a true story. They was in my school maybe a week. They transferred.
Couldn't cut it
because the discipline, the structure. It's a lot of discipline and structure. Everybody will tell me, even when we come, they better be walking a certain way. You got to be dressed. We do shirt and ties. They got to be a certain way, because like I said, when you get into the workforce, how are you going to conduct yourself? It's bigger than just basketball. Basketball is just a tool to get them where they need to go. But it's bigger than just basketball.
You do shirt and ties when you travel to games?
Shirt and tie, travel to games. Everybody tell you, anybody that know Bedford, they shirt and tie.
Why not the sweatsuits?
They do that. Huh? They do sweatsuits at the home games. They can wear sweatsuits. But when we go on the road, it's a business trip. So when we at home, we have our, you know, everybody got their Bedford suits. We have that. And then if I'm feeling a day where they, you know, they worked really hard, that's a gift for them.
Right.
Oh, we're on the road. You go wear the sweat. Oh, thanks, Coach. Because, you know, but I always teach them, you gotta dress the part sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the time, but sometimes you gotta look the part. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when we go on the road, it's shirt and tie.
Let's talk about your decision to accept the coaching position at Bedford.
Mm.
It was 2009. I read some stuff that, Coach, you was a little bit hesitant.
Yeah.
Because as a player, you kind of control things, but as a coach, you kind of sit bystander.
Yeah.
Walk me through that, your decision to take it, or your apprehension at first.
Well, a lot of people don't know the story. Deron Rippey, he was the coach at Bedford, good friend of mine.
Okay.
And Rippey wound up leaving, and the position opened. I did not want the coaching position. I didn't want to coach. I did not want to coach at all.
Why not?
Because I know me. I would be just the way I am right now. And that's why I didn't want to really do it, because I know my passion, my intensity, the way I am. So I said, nah, you know, I'll pass on it. But my principal came to me and said, listen, you're here in the building. You know our structure. You know what it is. You have to take the job. He pretty much said, you have to. So I spoke with my wife about it, and I said, I don't want to do it. She said, listen, you're going to be helping the kids. You got to give back. You should take the job. So after talking with them and getting everybody's blessing, I did it. And then I wound up being a maniac at it. So, but I really and truly love it. It's a great thing because I see these kids grow from little freshmen, the ones that can finish out, little freshmen and build up to be men. And a lot of my alumni come back. Mm. And they always tell me the same thing. Coach Phelps, you was right. You was right. They all say you was right. Your intensity, your passion, the way you have to be is bigger than this. Because some of them play college basketball. Yeah. Some of them don't. You know, my goal is to get them to where their ability is going to allow them to go. I always tell my kids, if you're a Division I player, the coach is going to see you. If people get caught up, you got to be a double A, you got to be a, it don't, if you can play, you are going to be found. How do you think they find these players in these little towns in Louisiana or these little places in, in Boston? Because he can play.
Yes, sir.
It don't matter. If you can play, people are going to see you.
They're
going to
see you. They're going to see you. What were those early days like for you?
Actually, it was pretty good. I did a lot of winning.
Yeah.
We won a lot my early days until then they moved us up to double A. It's very hard for us to compete in the double A because we can't get certain kids in our building because of the academic standards.
Right.
So it's very difficult. So I had to, we did a year and we struggled.
Struggled.
So I had to be realistic about who we were. We would be a decent double A team and we did okay. We won a couple of playoffs games. We did it for 2 years. We won a couple of playoff games. But that's not who we are. We're a division team. I know who we are, and we're going to compete at that level. And I have no problems
with it. You got no problem with that, Coach? That's not considered the ultimate in the city? Somebody that's won a Big East championship, Coach, you okay with that?
I'm fine with it. Let me tell you why. Because we are an academic school who stress academics first, and we're a really, really good basketball program that put kids into school. That's who we are. You got to know who you are. I can't go beyond that because I'm going to be lying to myself. Like I tell my kids all the time, don't live a lie. You're not a division. How am I going to tell my kids we double A players and I'm telling him he's not a Division I player? And he's telling himself, I am a Division I player. No, you're not. You're not a division. So who's lying to who?
Right.
So I got to be realistic about that. I'm fine with that.
You won a city championship that very first season.
Yeah, I had the great Brent Jones. People, if you don't know about Brent, Brent was a hell of a player. He was my only Division I scholarship player.
He would end up going to St. Francis.
Went to St. Francis, yeah. And it was a bidding war between St. Francis and Monmouth. Monmouth wanted him. So
Monmouth in New Jersey.
In New Jersey, they both wanted him at the time. And he came to me and said, Coach, Monmouth had a lot of bells and whistles. A lot of bells and whistles. I said, but Brent, where are you going to go and you're going to play? Monmouth's a beautiful campus, blah, blah, blah. And I said, Brent, go away. And I have a great relationship with Coach Bracca. I said, Brent, you need to go where you're going to play. And he sat with his mom and he said, Coach Phelps thing. And his mother said to this day, if Coach Phelps said you need to go to St. Francis, and that's where you need to go. and once again, I don't get none. I'm just looking what I think is the best fit for my kid.
Right.
And that's what he did. Now, I talk to all my kids. I say, here's your thing. It's up to you, but here's what I think. It's your decision, but this is what I think. Whichever decision you make, you know, I'm for you. That championship team, I got a kid that's an engineer. He was 6'8", 6'9", he's an engineer. I have guys that are teachers. I have dudes that's on the sanitation. All those kids are doing great. They all come back now. They got kids now. It's like, yo, I'm getting to be an old man now.
Yeah.
But they all doing great. And I have a load of kids that I go to Division II. I have a bunch of kids that went to, I have like a nice little pipeline with Brandeis. Ethan Edwards is there right now.
Okay.
And I had another kid, Latai Workman, there. And I had another kid, Ian Roach. Now, people got to understand, if you don't know about Brandeis, you're not getting into Brandeis if you don't have grades.
Yeah.
Brandeis is one of the top Division III schools in the country.
Yes, sir.
They have a Division I budget.
Yeah.
A Division I budget.
What they state
fly,
is that?
Massachusetts. Uh-huh. They fly all over the place. They fly to every game. There's only one game they don't fly to, and that's to New York, because they play NYU.
Yeah.
That's one of the best Division III conferences in the country.
Big time.
And I have one of my kids there, Ethan Edwards, doing great. He's doing really well there.
Amazing.
And a bunch of my kids, two of them graduated from there. Latai Workman, who graduated from there with a master's degree.
Who did you guys play in that championship game that first year?
Mont Haven.
Mont Haven.
I remember that. Mont Haven. They were really, really good. Really good.
What were you feeling leading up to that? As the coach? You played in big games as a player, but now you're going in as a coach. What was that like leading up to that championship game
for you? It's different because as a player, you have more control.
Yes, sir.
As a coach, you can set them up however you want to set them up. But when they get out there, you really don't have that much control. You know, because as a player, I can control. When I'm going to shoot. Your coaches, you just direct in and tell them. But the great thing is that I had the great Brent Jones. Mm-hmm. He was an extension of me. And I remember he used to hem people up. You heard what Coach Phelps said? You got to be, great point guard. Yeah. Talked and led and did everything the right way. If I can have another point guard or any kid like he was, because he was a floor general.
Yeah.
Now, here was a kid that could have, he averaged about 18 points, but 10 assists and a bunch of steals and all. He really could have averaged about 25 or 30 points. Mm-hmm. But he knew, you know, what I wanted to do, how to get other guys involved, and just led.
Yeah.
And my other kid that came to that was little Mikey. I don't know if you ever know, I had a little point guard named Mikey. The kid was great. Just ran the team. Did not care about numbers. Ran the team. And the point guard is so important.
Yeah.
He's the extension of the coach.
What did it feel like winning the championship, man? What do you remember about the celebration after or the days after? Like, what was it like that moment that night when you were alone and you had that championship in your hand?
It was great because the kids were happy. Because that's what they, I remember, once again, it's funny how things go around. They all said, we want to go to States, coach. Okay. I said, y'all sure y'all want to go to States? The only way you can go to States is that you got to win the city championship. Because you can't go to States if you don't win the city championship.
For sure.
So I said, so y'all saying y'all going to win the city championship? Yeah. And it's so funny. I still have the video to that where they were interviewed about that. And they kept saying, we want to go to the States. They wasn't even talking about the city champion. Wow. They were talking about the States. So it's like they already had the city in the bag. And they went out and they did it. So I was happy for them. Yeah. Because that's what they wanted to do. Yeah. So they did it.
They did it.
I was along for the ride.
That's it. That's it. How would you compare your feeling after winning the Big East to winning the city championship as a coach?
Man, it's different because as a player, you know, you work hard as a coach. Yeah. And it's more of a mental thing. When you're a player, you're physically putting your mind, your body, your soul into it. Mm-hmm. You know, as a coach, it's just really more of a mental, how you getting guys here. As a player, I mean, like I said, it's blood, sweat, tears. It's different as a player, because you are really competing with your guys. Because as a coach, like I said, I'm there with them, but I'm not on the court with them. When you're on the court with your guys, it's a total different feeling.
Take me through a Bedford practice. How does Rob Phelps prepare his guys to go out and win games?
It's very, very intense.
Do you have a time limit you like to stay within?
Well, you only get 2 hours because we only get the gym for about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. If I could be in there for four, I would be in there for four.
Yeah, you
because,
think so?
Because the reason being is because not more so of running and all, it's just getting into their mind. Because I do a lot of talking and explaining and teaching. Mm-hmm. Teaching takes time.
Yes, sir.
So that's what I do. I take a lot of time teaching. So I usually, you know, the first 30 minutes is just like really just a nice warm up and a lot of shooting. And then after that, it's just really detailed on the defense. Mm-hmm. And then after the defense, we walk through certain press breaks and systems and break things down, 2 minutes this, 3 minutes that. Then we scrimmage a little bit. And then we do a final review over everything. And then we bring them in, and then we talk about who did what mistakes we made, what we could have done better. Mm-hmm. And I try to squeeze all of that in within 2 hours. It's very, very tough.
Very tough.
Yeah.
But teaching.
A lot of teaching. You have to teach. You can't just throw these kids out there. And that's, like I said, the coaching, I only can speak for me. I don't know what others do. But with me, like you said, even with me, with my animation on the sideline, it's because we taught and we go over it. So I get so excited. Like, yo, how do you miss that? Did we go over that? So it's more of a review thing to go over that. But the teaching is so important. You cannot expect these kids to go out and do things if you don't teach them.
I mentioned that I saw you guys at Hirsch. I was just peeking back and forth, and I saw one of your players, Josh. Mm-hmm. He was letting it fly.
Yeah.
He finished with 30 plus that game.
Right.
I'm like, damn, I wonder what Phelps is drawing up over there. Like, how would you describe your offensive philosophy? Because you was letting him go.
Oh, yeah. If you can shoot, anybody that knows me or played with me, I'm going to let you shoot. I don't know if you remember the kid I named had Wahad.
No, not for
me. Oh, I had Wahad. He actually transferred from Lachlan. He came to me. And Wahad, literally, everybody know, he used to shoot from 30 feet. But you know why I let him do that? Because he used to do it in practice. I saw him doing it in practice every day. Now, people that never saw him, they'd be like, yo, is this crazy? This coach letting him shoot. But he did this in practice. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you think Steph just do that in the game? Mm-hmm. Steph do that in practice. He take those shots. Well, how I used to do that in practice. So if you show me you can, like Josh show me he could do that. Josh got the green light. But you better play defense. Yeah. You don't play defense, it's going to be a problem. But if you can shoot, I'm going to let you shoot. I'm not one of them, anybody, I'm a shooter, so I know the feeling. Yeah. If you can shoot, let it fly.
Coach, you don't worry about it dissolving into park basketball, like lacking structure?
Well, we have a lot of structure. We have a lot of set plays. Even when we played in our summer event, we have sets. Mm-hmm. But my thing is, why do we need to run sets if we can get up the court and I know I got shooters and we could kick it up ahead, let it shoot, let it fly. If people remember Lyle Marymount.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
If you can shoot, yeah. If you can shoot, let it fly. And that's my philosophy. But you got to prove and show that to me. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I could slow it down and we could do that. But if I have a guy that can shoot, I'm going to let you shoot.
Let him shoot.
Yeah, let him shoot.
Let him shoot it. First year was 2009. Here we are, 2022. What advice would you give first-year head coach Rob Phelps? If you could go back and tell him now. The Rob Phelps today, what advice would you give to the first-year head coach? I'm sure you learned a lot of lessons along the way.
That's a great question. People think I'm animated now. You got to remember, I just finished playing. I was a maniac. And I was really hard. I was hard on that that first group, my championship group. I was hard on them. Just like a lot of running and, because I'm still in player mode.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, those guys did it. As hard as I was, I wouldn't have been as hard on them.
Why not? It won your championship, some would say. No.
But they didn't need it. They really didn't need it. They were a very mature group. The groups that I've had over the years, they need it. Because these kids are not as mature as that group. Those groups were my back old group. But I was hard on them. I was hard on them on the court. I was hard on them off the court because they had to get that stuff done in the classroom. Mm-hmm. But that was one thing I wouldn't have been as hard on them. I was really hard on that group. But also loving and caring. One thing, I love all my boys. But they're going to do things a certain way. Yeah, mm-hmm. Things have to be done. Or you're going to have chaos. You have to run your program. If not, the kids are going to run the show, and then you know what can happen from there. Yes, you're going to have problems. Mm-hmm. And it's going to always, who does it always come back to? The coach.
Yes, sir.
So you got to make sure things are done a certain way. Mm-hmm. And still give them that freedom. Because my guys, they still get that freedom, but they know if you goof off, it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I would say not be as hard.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I never played high school basketball. I went to the Army right after high school. Then I ended up coming back playing college basketball at Kingsborough Community College. Then I went to D3 York and Queens. So I'm not really aware of like the whole high school scene, who's who, who's mm-hmm. what. But my teammate from Kingsborough, who right. was actually the head coach at Wingate now,
right.
my man Kayvon Baker. I've always been by his side.
Right.
And I remember we were at Dewey. He's like, man, we're going to go see Bedford. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best programs. That's Rob Phelps. Mm-hmm. And he takes me to a junior high school gym mm-hmm. to watch you guys play.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is one of the best programs in the city, but you guys don't have your own gym.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that impact your program?
A lot, because it's very difficult to get a gym. We have to do a lot of scrambling. But my boy Eric Hicks and Mike Anderson at the Star Dome, whenever there's a problem, they always stand in for me and help me out. But it's hard, We don't even have an auditorium in my school. We only got 387 kids. Mm-hmm. It's a small school. But like I said, it's based off of academics first. And through my connections, because I have a lot of connections, I'm able to finagle and get some things done. But I couldn't get things done without people at the Brooklyn Star Dome, because whenever there's a problem, they always mm-hmm. step in for me and help me out. And then there's other places like BKSY, those guys over there at the post. If I ever need anything, I always can call them. Yeah. So I have people where I can look to help if I need. But it's tough. Yeah. It's tough. We don't have a gym. A lot of people, y'all do all that winning and y'all do this and do that and y'all don't have a gym. No, we don't. People don't understand. We don't have a gym.
So where do you guys practice?
We practice at PS3 right down the street from Bedford. And we used to play at 113.
That's what I think.
Yeah, it was at 113. But then there was a permit issue because mm-hmm. you can't do anything without a permit, as you know. Sure. But then I reached out to my guys at the Brooklyn Star Dome at Game Over. And they always come through for me as long as they could fit me in. So we have our games over there.
So this kind of takes away your home court advantage?
Yeah, a little bit. Because it's not, we don't really have a place where we call home.
Call home, right?
Yeah.
That you could decorate with your
stuff.
Yeah,
But the great thing about Bedford Kids, they follow us. They come out and they support. Like I said, we're small. But if you see our kids that come to a game, it might be 60 or 70 kids, you would think it's like 200 or 300 people there. Because they really support and back the kids. So, like I said, that's the good thing about having a small community.
And I like to bring that up because there's hurdles in this city, but you can get it done.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you got a leader, if you got somebody that's willing to put in the work, it can be done.
Yeah.
So there's really no excuses for anybody out there. Like,
listen, I go to these other places. I'm like, damn, this shit, yeah. I mean, some of these places, we was at Family Academy over the summer.
Yeah.
Beautiful gym. Beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I was like, wow, this is nice. I wish we had something like this. But it's a blessing for those kids to have that.
Right.
And like I said, it's a blessing for us because, like I said, the Brooklyn Star Dome, they come and help us out a lot. And I'm just grateful that the kids have an opportunity to play somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do just fine for what we have.
You sure do.
Yeah.
Coach, your high school career got busy. Nazareth Regional.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
Well, when I was at Nazareth, we put in some serious work there, because when I first got to Nazareth was really known for being a football school.
Okay.
And they had a great basketball tradition, but they had some, you know, hard times. Everybody go through their ups and downs. And then I came in as a freshman, and not a lot of people played freshman varsity back then.
Nope.
I think Kenny Anderson was the first.
Yep.
And then I was kind of right after Kenny. Because you got to remember, Derek, Phelps, Khalid, all those guys, Mashwell, they all played JV.
Yeah.
I was a freshman along with Kenny.
Kenny was playing at Archbishop Molloy, and you were a freshman playing varsity at Nazareth.
I think we were the only, that I know of, I could be wrong, but we were the only two at that time.
I read that.
Yeah.
The only two four-year varsity Catholic school players at that time.
At that time.
Coach, where are you from exactly?
I'm from Brooklyn. I'm originally from Brownsville, Brooklyn.
Where at?
Over by Van Dyke on Sacman and Livonia, yes.
And you went to play at Nazareth for Ted Gustas.
Yep, Coach Gustas. He got the job. I was originally supposed to go to Boys and Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Lawrence Ballard was going to be teammates at Boys and Girls. Because me and Bud, we know each other for years, and we played in the same junior high school league.
Okay.
But then Coach got the job at Nazareth, and I followed Coach. Because he was my coach. He was my middle school coach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I wound up at Nazareth.
Tell me about your earliest memory of Ted Gustas.
Oof. I mean, people don't know. Coach, even to this day, still can play.
Yeah.
But Coach was a great player back then and taught me and others. If people don't know, Coach coached a lot of players. And he taught all those core values of doing things the right way, having high character, being respectful, putting in the work. You know, these are the things that he's always said. And those values are pretty much the same values that I follow now with my teams.
It's funny. Ted Gustas, for those who don't know, legend in the city. One of my OGs said, yo, Ted Gustas was kind of the first person from where we from that was doing the coaching thing on that level, like legitimately.
Yes, yes.
Like Bishop Blockland, Naz. He was one of us, but he was suited and tied up. Like,
there you go. See the same principles, shirt and tie shoe. That's what we did, because he always did that, and he was that guy.
Yeah, and he ended up being working at a high position in PSL, executive director.
Yeah, he was the commissioner, executive commissioner.
He's retired from there.
Yeah.
And nowadays you can catch him on your bench at times, helping out at Bedford.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time somebody turned to me and was like, yo, why is the PSL like director over there on Bedford's bench? It's like, it's a conspiracy. They out to get
him. But they don't know the story.
That's his mentor. That's his coach. Relax.
That's right. Yeah. It's nothing to do with no conspiracy, no nothing. But people don't know. He's had me ever since I was in the 6th and 7th grade. So, you know, but they don't, like you said, people that don't know, they're going to be like a conspiracy. Oh, he's only looking out for Bedford. No, not at all.
Mm.
That was my coach at 6th grade.
Mm. What's your fondest memory of playing for Nas?
First of all, we won city and state championship. We won.
City and state championship?
Yeah,
what year?
89.
Well, what year of your career?
87, 88. And I think we won it again in 89, 90.
So twice.
We won. So the banners are still there. You can go there. When you go to Nash, just look up there. That's what Coach is talking about. But, yeah, we did a lot of winning. And I had a lot of individual success.
Mm-hmm.
But not only just for me, but for my teammates. Because we had other guys that got scholarships and did well. And then I had other teammates that are now doctors, lawyers, just success. And people think you just got to be successful on the court. We had a lot of successful guys off the court that's doing great. But just for me, a lot of individual success. You know, I was probably one of the, if they had other All-Americans, but I was an All-American to come out there. You know, I made All-City 2 or 3 times. Just a lot of good success.
What was that like for your family, watching those games?
A lot. My mother didn't care much about basketball. Yeah. You know, God rest her soul. I lost my mother about 3 years ago. But she didn't, you know, my mom didn't really know a lot about basketball. Yeah. All things she know, it made me happy, and I really wanted to do it. And a lot of people, I tell this to my team, my dad wasn't around. Coach Gus was like my dad. My dad never saw me play. My dad was not around. So that's why I open my doors to my practices for the parents.
Yeah?
I tell my parents.
Stop it, Rockefeller.
Yes, it's the truth. I tell my parents, please come to practice. It's a method to my madness. Because when you go to games, parents are on the sideline. Why is he yelling at my son? Why is this? I don't understand this. He so this, he so that. If you come to my practice, they're going to see why your son is getting yelled at. They're going to see why your son is going to be disciplined. So now when my parents come to a game, you know what they do? They're sitting there and they're going. Because coach told them that in practice.
Wow.
It's a method to the madness. So now when other people be like, I don't understand. You hear how you talk to your son? They're going to go, uh-uh. You should see his practice. It's worse than that. So I advise some coaches, depending on the parent, let them come in and sit. You know, my parents, they sit there, they quiet, they don't say much. Even sometimes they'll say, you heard what Coach Phelps said. Coach, run them some more. you know, because they understand what's going on and the core values of what we're doing. I advise coaches to have their parents come to the practice. That way, you're all on the same page. And the parents, you know how it can be sometimes. Parents are against, oh, why is that coach doing that? It works for me.
Yeah.
It works for me. So I would say if it's doable, do it. Mm.
I saw that you played with Kenny Anderson in the summer and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys have a matchup in high school?
Yeah. Kenny went to Malloy. I went to Nazareth. Kenny was a beast. Kenny was the one. People don't understand that era.
Yeah.
We had Kenny Anderson, who went to Malloy. You had Derek Phelps at Christ the King. You had Khalid Reeves at Christ the King. You had Jamal Faulkner. That's 3 All-Americans on one team at that time. Then Talentine had Adrian Autry, Malik Sealy, and Brian Reese. And others. Mm-hmm. St. Francis was really good. Holy Cross was really good. They had my man Rich Ashmead, All-American. You went to UConn. People don't know about him. Nasty. That era of basketball was so tough. And don't let me forget my boy Jamal Mashburn. This is how bad it was. Jamal Mashburn, who was Mr. Basketball.
For New York.
He didn't make McDonald's All-American. When do you know a Mr. Basketball of your state not being a McDonald's All-American? You tell me that.
I can't think of a time.
Mashburn was a killer. Mashburn was the same. When everybody see Mash in the NBA, he was that same size in high school. Same ball handling skills, everything. Mash was a pro in high school. People don't understand how tough Mash was to be there. And Mash was like a teddy bear, the nicest guy. And he would kill you with a smile. But he was Mr. Basketball and didn't make McDonald's.
All-American.
Are you serious? That's how tough that era was. And that's just the Catholic school.
Yeah.
We ain't talking about the public school. People don't understand. They see Bud. Bud went to West Virginia. Bud was an all-city player. Ephraim Whitehead. Norman Marbury. We can go on and on and on. That 90s era was the real deal. You had dogs. People, Dave Edwards. I could go on. Conrad, Brooklyn. Lamont Jones, Charles. I could go on and on. This is how it was back then.
Why do you think that was the case? Why do you think the city looked like that? Kill us, and now not so much.
Because nobody left. Nobody was going to prep schools. Nobody wasn't doing that. You had a couple of guys. I remember Aunt Kate was a guy. People don't know about him. He was tough. He went off. He was an uptown guy. But
so why are they leaving now? Why the urge?
You know why? Because Daily News. Back then, you got to remember, we had Daily News, New York Post, Newsday. We had all of them. We had MSG coverage. We had SNY coverage. We had all the media outlets for all the high school teams.
Right.
Kenny Anderson used to be on the back page before the Knicks were on the back page. This is how bad Kenny was.
As a high schooler.
All of us. We used to have articles. You see all these posters? Articles in the Daily News like this on high school. There's no coverage like that anymore.
Right.
You know, so part of that is missing. But when you go out of state, they, you know, they have certain coverage. Now, here's where I applaud you guys. All these different outlets and, you know, what basketball has is doing, A-Game and all these guys, all these different outlets. They have now become the media outlets for these kids. Copy. And you guys do a great job with that. I tell all the guys, without you guys, there's no coverage. Because the newspapers don't do it anymore.
Right.
So now I promote my own guys on my social media. Yes, and sir. I was not a social media guy at all.
Right.
But I help promote my guys with my social media outlets because the people that follow me. And like I said, with what you guys do, you guys have now become the media outlets for high school basketball now. And y'all do a great job with it. I applaud you.
Thank you. Thank you. So Rob Phelps, you managed to win city and state during this era of killers?
Yeah, because it's not because I was that good. Coach Gus's was that good of a coach
right.
to get us to combine and win against those kind
you
of
players. You played the two?
No, I was a forward. People don't understand. I was almost playing a big guy. I was big like this, but I had to develop to be a two guard. Because my coach said, if you want to play college ball, you have to be a two guard. You're not going to college, not on a power five level, you know, in the Big East. You better be a guard. So I put the work in, practice, thousands and thousands of shots. And I was a big guard in college, you know, so, and that's another thing, development. I don't put it all on the coaches. Let me tell you, because I see certain coaches putting the time in, but these kids must invest in putting the work in for themselves.
Right.
The coach is going to do it. So it's like in the classroom. The teacher can give you all the work, but if you don't go home and study, so it's the same philosophy. You have to put the work in and work on your game to get better.
It is a different era. You know, a lot of these kids are not gym rats. We were.
Yes.
You know, I know you guys definitely were. Why though? Is it the social media distraction? I feel like there was distractions for us too. There was girls, there was music, party, but why?
It's a different form with the social media outlet. I mean, you go on Twitter, TikTok, and all of this. We didn't have that. When you look at the videos, it's like you watching television.
Yes.
You remember how it was when we used to watch TV. You could sit in front of kids today don't watch TV, they on their phones.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah.
Even with my kids, as soon as practice is over, they'll run to their phone.
Yes, sir.
It's just what it is. So what we have to do is now, I can communicate with my kids through the phone.
Yeah.
I send them all the videos I want them to learn about. You know, I'm pretty sure y'all do the same. Send them all the videos you got to learn about. I send them messages.
Mm.
You know, this is how I communicate with them. Besides this kind of communication. Yeah. But you know the best way to get them? Because they're going to pick their phone up. Oh, Coach Phelps sent me a message. Oh, I'm telling you, that's how I do it.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
When did you sign to go to Providence? What stage of your high school career?
That was 90. I was there from 90 to 94.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, were you a high school? Were you a senior, going into senior year, junior?
I signed my beginning of my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Beginning of my, like all these kids now, all these offers or whatever they get. We didn't do the offers. We used to get letters.
Yeah.
I used to have a trunk. It's a true story. Trunk maybe about this big. Over 500 letters I had in there. Because they didn't, and we used to get a lot of phone calls.
Yeah.
My mother used to, they don't answer the phone. Because we had, remember caller ID?
Yeah, yeah.
So you could see it's Syracuse or Providence or Kentucky or whatever. It was overwhelming.
Who was after you?
Everybody. You know, only school that did not recruit me, and I don't think I could have got in there anyway, was Duke.
Wow.
Because academically, I don't think I would have been able to get into Duke. But everyone else, I was recruited by everybody.
They were after you?
Yeah, man. It was crazy. I'm talking about it was crazy.
How was that decision? Was it overwhelming? You got all these letters?
I got used to it. Mm-hmm. When I first got my first letter was in the ninth grade. It came from Rutgers University. That was my first letter.
Wow.
That was my first letter. And then after that, and there was no offers. They wasn't giving offers back then. You would get letters. It would build up.
Right.
And you had to continue to prove yourself because it was just letters of interest. So, yeah, we're thinking about recruiting you. And then they continue to see the progression. Then later they was like, after the phone call, you have to talk on the coach. And they would say, listen, we're offering you a scholarship.
Mm.
That's how it went. Mm. But it's not like now. Coaches today now, they send their offers through social media.
For sure.
Oh, well, we're officially offering him. Mm. But this is where it is now. But it wasn't like that back then.
Do you remember coaches showing up to your games?
Oh, that's how it was. It was coaches used to be at the game. It used to be Jim Boeheim used to be over there. Dave Odom, who's at Wake Forest, he's the Wake Forest coach. He was over there. You had Coach Barnes or Coach Fran. No, they were all right there.
You had Jimmy Boeheim and Nazareth?
Oh, yeah. They used to come to the... Boeheim used to come. Digger Phelps at Notre Dame came. Oh, yeah. The Rutgers coach, Bob Wenzel. That's who's the Rutgers. Bob Wenzel was the coach. He came. I mean, everybody. They used to come, just pop up. They used to pull me out of class. Oh, Coach such and such as him is here to talk to you. And they would pull me out for a few minutes, and they'll go back. And they'll be like, oh, we're going to stay around for your practice. They used to watch me run, just to run miles. We used to do 2.5 miles. And they used to just watch me run, just to see what kind of work ethic I have, if I would quit. That's how it was. They would really analyze you.
Who you were.
Who you were. They can't do that now, because when you go on the circuit, they're just watching you play.
Yeah.
They all that stuff changed once these sneaker companies took over the circuit, because they used to actually come to your high school games.
Yeah.
That's how they recruited you. They used to come to the high school games.
Was this a pressure-filled situation for you? Would you relish it? Like, how would you describe, yo, Phelps, Boeheim's in the crowd.
It was normal back then. Yeah. It wasn't like it was something new. It was a normal thing. Mm-hmm. They would come to the games, they would watch you, and you did what you did.
Yeah.
You can't fold under the pressure. You come to the game, oh, you average 30, I got my 30 or 35. That's just what it was. It was no pressure. You know, that's what it was. Mm. You know, it was just, it was normal.
Yeah.
You know?
With all of those schools after you, some may say Providence wasn't the sexiest choice.
Right.
How'd you come to that decision, Coach?
Because it was small. It reminded me of Nazareth.
Wow.
Like I said, I had a lot of options.
Yeah.
My two schools that it came to, my five schools, it was Rutgers, Tennessee, Wake Forest. Mm. Me and Tim Duncan was on a trip together. We were together.
Wow.
We were roadies. They called it roadies back then, because that was your road buddy.
Who they brought you to Wake Forest campus and showed you around.
Yeah,
you and Tim Duncan.
I'm going to tell you, it was me, Tim Duncan, Rodney Rogers. You know who that is, Rodney Rogers. He just passed. Rodney Rogers. It was me, Rodney Rogers, Tim Duncan, and the guy Troy Brown. We were all together. Tim Duncan, just like, never spoke. The whole trip, Tim Duncan said but two words.
Yeah.
Great guy, but didn't speak that much. And we were roadies. And when I went to Allen Houston was my roadie.
At Tennessee?
Tennessee, yes, he was my roadie.
His dad was coaching.
Yes, Wade Houston was there. He was at my roadie. He was my roadie. When I went to Providence, I had Paco Screen. Paco and Eric Murdoch were my roadies. They were the one that showed me around. And but I like Providence. UConn, I had Rod Sellers and the little guard, the little light-skinned guard, Chris Smith.
Okay.
Nice. Chris, those were my roadies. Those were the guys that took me around and everything, and they show you a good time. But it came down to UConn and Providence.
So you took the decision to coach Gustis? What do you
say? Coach Gustis wanted me to go to UConn.
Yeah.
But I felt more comfortable at Providence. Mm-hmm. It was smaller. UConn was a bigger campus. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go somewhere that was smaller. In Tennessee, it was just too big.
Too big.
Nice campus, but just too big.
Was there a moment at Providence that confirmed, yo, I made the right decision? Like, this is it. I'm home.
I would say the end of my junior year.
Yeah.
My freshman and sophomore. Freshman, I was mostly doing my academics. Yeah. Coach Barnes was a... Man, he was no joke, man. He would get after you. I was like, damn, did I make the right choice? Mm-hmm. But because you go through that progression, and then as you learn and learn, I felt that I made the right choice. And then I knew it was the right choice because I was on course to graduate.
Yeah.
You know, I did my academics. I was good. Mm-hmm. So once I knew I was on course to graduate, I was like, yo, I'm good.
Coach Phelps, you at Nazareth, you're putting up 35 points a game. But at Providence, you averaged 10 your first year.
Yep.
Then seven.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an adjustment for you?
Were you
frustrated?
Not frustrated. It was an adjustment because it was a different style. It was a different system, and I had to learn how to play with other great players. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just me. And that's another thing guys got to learn. You have to learn how to play with other great players. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of guys, it's tough for the NBA. Yeah. They can't make, because you got to learn how to play with other great players. So, which helped me, because now when I went overseas, it benefited me, because now I had other good players and I was able to adapt and get them better. You know, you hear that all the time. How do you get other guys better? So I knew how to get other guys better. So it actually helped me. It helped me. So it was a good thing, yes.
Was your favorite moment from playing overseas?
Making money.
There you go.
making a lot of good money, but also meeting a lot of good people. Mm-hmm. You know, I was over there for 12 years, and the money was great, but I met a lot of good people to this day. I have a lot of great connections.
Mm-hmm. Would you come home in the summers?
Just briefly, come home for a little while and go back. Because it'll depend on the kind of deal you signed. If you signed a one-year deal, you know, you go home, come right back, and then you would leave out again. If you signed a two-year deal, you would come home for a little while and then go back right back and then start working out again and stay there. So it all depend on what kind of deal. You never really got more than a 2 or 3 year deal. I usually always get it like a 1 year, because if you get a 1 year, another country might want you to make more money. So it's all a business decision. Now, when I was in Japan, I stayed for two.
Okay.
Money was great over there. So I stayed there 2 years. When I was in China, I stayed two. The Asian, they pay a lot of money. Yeah. So I stayed over there longer.
Coach, I'm pocket watching. They giving out NBA money in some of these countries.
Oh, yes.
I won't ask how much money.
No, you got to ask it. I don't have a problem.
What was the biggest payday?
$20,000 a month. That was my biggest payday. You made $20,000 a month.
What country is this?
China. $20,000 a month. Then I went to Japan. You made $10,000 a month. You got to remember, there's not full years over there. You would eight months,
right,
or 9 months. You know, rarely you play 12 months. But when I was in England, they paid me for the whole 12 months because I signed a two-year deal when I went to England. Okay. And over there, I made about $6,000 a month. Mm-hmm. The money was great. Yeah. I tell people, but you do have situations where if you go to a certain team and the sponsors back out, you won't get paid.
Yeah.
Now, you got to say, look, they could say, look, stay. We're going to guarantee you the money, or you could leave. Thank God I never had that situation, but I have a lot of friends and buddies that played and they didn't get paid and they would leave. Mm. The only thing they would guarantee you is a flight back home.
Wow.
So it all depends. I haven't heard those many stories now to this day. I don't know. I don't have a lot of guys that play over there. But back then, I heard a few stories. Thank God I didn't get into those situations. I always got my money wherever I went.
When you played your last game, did you know this was going to be my final year?
Yeah, my last game, I was 31 or 32, mm-hmm, something like that.
Kind of young for a basketball player.
I tell guys, oh, yeah, that was it. I was over there 12 years. It was it. And my body, it's a lot of wear and tear they put on you as an American, because you have to do everything. They want you to score. They want you to rebound. They want you to go out and do the media. They want you to do this because they always requesting you. It's a lot. And you have to have a certain personality to deal with it. You can't go over there, oh, I ain't doing that. They don't want that. They want guys that's going to be humble, great, respectful, and good community people. Because a lot of guys, you always say, they go over there and they come right back.
Yeah.
Because you got to be a certain kind of individual to be able to handle it.
They want you to be a pro.
Want you to be a pro. There you go. So, think, like I've said with me, I had a good personality. I was a people person. I was very adaptable wherever I went. And I didn't have those issues.
Now, Coach, up until that point, your life was basketball.
Yeah.
Now it was coming to an end. Like, how scary was that next chapter, or thinking about embarking on that next chapter of your life?
Yeah, because you got to figure out what you want to do. It took me about a year or two. And Coach Gustin said, listen, man, you're a smart guy. You need to look into teaching. I was like, man, I ain't want to do no teaching.
Yeah.
I don't want to teach. He said, no, but there's different aspects of it that you can do. You don't have to be in a classroom. You could do this or you could do that. Yeah. And I was like, nah. So I had a company, a company in Detroit that wanted to hire me. It was called Textron. They wanted me to come out and help lead their human resources.
Okay.
I didn't know if I wanted to do that. I was like, I didn't want to do that. So I took upon the teaching thing. You know, I went in and I said, you know what? I'll teach. I taught history because I got my degree in social science. So I taught history for a little while. I'm like, man, these kids is crazy. I said, these kids is crazy. I don't know if I want to do this. And then what happened was I did that for a little while. And then I worked at a middle school, 143 in Bed-Stuy. Mm-hmm. The dean, he was there, and he retired.
Okay.
He was retiring, and all the students respected me because they knew I was a ball player. All the parents knew me. Yo, that's Rob, da, 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 yo. And he told the principal, your next dean is right here.
Wow.
This is neat, because the kids respect him. And I was at 143 for about 4 or 5 years, the dean there. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Muhammad came and took over the principalship at 143. And this is how we got over to Bedford.
Okay.
Then they offered him the job over at Bedford. And he told him, he said, I'm not taking the job at Bedford and left. I got Phelps, this or that person with
need
me.
His team.
He need his team.
Yeah, yeah.
So in 2009, we went over there, and I've been the dean there ever since.
Ever since.
The dean had just been running the show over there.
Oh, that first year after playing, when you were trying to figure things out, where were you at? Just in the house?
No, I was you know, doing some coaching, training, doing that, working at a couple of facilities, athletic facilities, coaching, doing stuff like that. Because money wasn't an issue. I had money saved. Yeah. That's another thing. You had to save your money. I had money saved. But if you keep spending, spending, and nothing's coming in, that bank account starts to dwindle. So I said, you know what, I had to do something. Then I did that. And after I got in, I got my master's degree. I got my master's degree in education. So I did my master's degree, took a couple of courses online and also in class. Mm-hmm. I got my master's. And I tell people all the time, once you get that master's, and you, as you know, you work in the DOE, it started to rise for you, and everything's been great since then, you know. So it's a good profession to get into because not only are you giving back, you know, the money after you put your time in, the money's pretty decent. So you know, I don't have any complaints, and I, like I said, I love what I do. It's a great, great job.
That's what's up, man. You like some real life hang with Mr. Cooper, like played big time ball.
Yep, yep.
Came back to the school.
Yep.
And now you got your squad. Mm-hmm. Few things. Something that popped up for us recently. Marijuana.
Mm.
Coach, I never smoked weed in my life.
Neither have I.
But I know the story around it is changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stigma is no longer there. It's legalized. There's weed millionaires. I know there are professional athletes who it's well documented that they use it and they're successful.
Right.
And I learned that a kid is smoking weed recently, and I just really didn't know what to do or think
yeah.
in 2022. What do you make of marijuana and it being around your team?
It's here. Let me tell you something. It is here. You know, I've had situations where I've had kids that tried it or did it, and parents called me about it. And I said, well, why are you doing it? A lot of these kids are self-medicating.
Mm-hmm.
And they use it because they may be depressed or they're feeling a certain way. And I tell them, why don't you just go get some serious medical treatment and go find out what's really going on? Because you're getting this marijuana from the street.
Yeah.
You don't know where it's coming from, what these people are putting in it. And a few kids that I've known, they have bugged out because they messed up with, they got stuff, got some lace stuff.
Yeah.
And I tell kids, if I find out that you're using it, depending on the situation, I can't accept it because you just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But let me, like I said, I had to really think about it. When I talk to a kid and they're like, but coach, I'm really depressed. It makes me feel a certain way. It makes me feel better. I have to have a meeting with their parents.
Yeah.
And I don't condone it. That's not something that I want to do. But like I said, it's certain situations you got to deal with.
You see, coach, this is why we do this podcast. Never once did I ever consider self-medication.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's the source of that kid choosing to pick up this drug?
Yep, yep.
See, this is why we reach out to the OG. Yo, that is a great point.
Yeah, a lot of the kids, they do it for self-medication. And what I try to do is steer them to, like, you know, go get some proper professional help. Maybe they may send you to get the proper marijuana that you may need. I don't know, because I don't do this stuff. I have no idea. But I know the kids that I deal with, it makes them feel better. They're not as hyper. They don't get as angry. It calms them down.
Right.
I'm only telling you what I hear from the kids. And I'm not talking about just players. I'm talking about regular students.
Yeah, yeah.
Just regular students, they do this stuff. It's everywhere.
Right.
You know, Bedford ain't immune to it. I got kids that smoke. I'm pretty sure it's everywhere. No one is immune to it. I tell people all the time, they go, you know, I say, don't y'all know how many kids at Princeton do drugs, smoke, drink?
You're right.
It's just what it is. But it's how you help people, how you use it, why you use, like you said, trying to find out what it is. That's why I said it's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these kids self-medicate.
Yeah.
That's why they do it.
Wow. That's a great point, Coach.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much for that. Talk about the basketball landscape. You got a son that's out there playing now.
Yeah, Rob Phelps Jr. doing some great things over at Christ the King. Just turned 15, 6'3 and a half.
What year is he in?
He's a sophomore.
Okay.
Sophomore. He plays JV ball, doing really, really well. And everybody asks me, why he ain't at Bedford? Why you ain't sending him to Bedford? Well, the big reason is because when he was coming into high school, they had the rule that if you don't get the shot, you can't play.
Right.
He was enrolled. He was in Bedford. He was in. You know, I wanted him. He was coming. But once they said that, I had to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Do I, because of my selfish reasons, bring my son here and make him sit out on something that he wants to do and play right. basketball? My other second choice was Christ the King. So that's why he's at Christ the King. And he's doing well. He love it. So that's where he's going to be at.
Could Rob Phelps have coached his son, Rob Phelps Jr.? Could that have worked?
My wife don't think so. She's like, nah, man. You I already know how you get down. But it would have been a lot because in the house and then on the court, it would have been a lot. But I would have had to make some adjustments.
Yeah.
You know, just like in the game, I would have to make some adjustments. But I'm happy and satisfied where he is. He's doing well academically. He's doing well there. I see the growth. I see the maturity. I see him getting better. I mean, he's doing well. Mm-hmm. And he's growing like a rocket. You know, he's probably going to be about 6'6 or 6'7. And I'm one of the parents, just let the process go. Why he's not on varsity? He ain't ready yet.
Right.
Or why he ain't on it? No. Sometimes you just got to let the progression happen. And so it doesn't have to be microwave so fast, immediate. You know, he's not me. I was different. I was able to play varsity as a freshman. Mm-hmm. He's not ready now. He's going to be very good. Anybody that saw my son, they know he's going to be a player. Mm-hmm. But just let it progress.
That's interesting. You are Rob Phelps, who played big-time high school basketball, Big East champion, pro player, and you're a dad, and you're a successful coach. Like, for you to exercise that patience, it's cool. We got some parents who ain't never bounced a ball in their life, and they want, I need it right now. Right, my kid needs to do this. I'm like, yo, if you don't sit down.
Yeah.
How would you describe how you, I guess, introduced the game to him?
To be honest with you, when my son was born, the first thing I did, I put a basketball in his, and he grew to it. Me and my wife told him all the time, you don't have to play basketball. Mm-hmm. But once he told me he wanted to do it and he was serious about it, trust me, all my buddies talk to Rob. You sure you want to do this? I get Dickie on the phone with him. Mm-hmm. I get my boy Jamal Robinson, who's the coach at Oral Roberts right now, talk to him. Malcolm Huckabee talks to him. Rob get everybody. Lloyd Daniels. Everybody talks to my son. And they always get back to the same thing. Just listen to your dad. Mm-hmm. Just listen to your dad. And my thing is, I'm hard on my son. I push him, but because that's what he wants. Now, if he didn't want it, I would fall back.
Hands off.
But he wants this. So I'm on him. I push him just as hard as you see me. Could you imagine one-on-one and me and him in the gym? One-on-one going after it? Yeah. But he wants this. That's what he want to do. Because I told him, once you tell me you want to do it, I'm going to give it to you. And it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
Now, when you say you don't want it no more, I will fall back. But he wants it, so I'm going to push him. Because that's the only way. You got to go hard.
Yeah.
But he has a chance. He has a chance.
That's cool. Dickie Simpkins got any good Michael Jordan stories?
He gave me a few, but I could just give you just a couple, maybe that what y'all seen on the show.
Last Dance.
Jordan was didn't play, man. He'd get after you. Mm-hmm. You know, and him and Dickie were like really, really tight.
Nice.
You know, he scouted for Jordan when he was at Charlotte. And Dickie gave me some stories, some I can't say.
Yeah.
But, just as far as Dickie used to always tell me, he was a big-time competitor. Mm-hmm. Everything that you see is what it really is. Because I used to always say, yo, is Mike really like that? He said, yo, Rob, you don't know. Mike don't play, you know. And the whole stories about how he'd be up all night and he could still go out and get 40 or 50. Yeah. He was different like that. But as he said, Mike was the hardest worker. Mike worked really hard. He was a no-nonsense guy. And a lot of guys on the team didn't like him. And I said, wow. And Dickie told me, said, great leaders aren't liked.
Yeah.
They just aren't liked because they're different. And they're going to push you to where they are.
Yeah.
And if you can't handle it, you're going to be gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you can see, only certain people were able to play with Mike.
Dickie Simpkins worked as a scout for Mike?
Retired. Yeah, he worked as a scout. Dickie works as a scout right now for, I think it's the Washington... What are they, the Wizards now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he works as a scout with them, but he also works on Fox.
Okay.
He does the Big East, Fox One, and Fox. He does all the Big East games. So.
That's cool, Mike, looking out for former teammates.
Oh, yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. People don't know certain things the way, mm-hmm. you know, Mike is and something like that. But, you know, Dickie was with them for a while, and then he moved on to the Wizards. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dickie Simpkins is working as an analyst for the Big East. When we talk in college basketball, we only talk in two conferences.
Right.
Big East, ACC.
Yeah.
Could you make a case for the Big East being the best conference?
Now?
No, just overall in history.
I would say we have to be Big East, ACC.
Yeah.
Only reason I'm a little biased to the Big East because I played in the Big East.
Of course.
But yeah, Big East, ACC, SEC. Mm. I think those would probably be, you know, with the Kentuckys, the South Carolinas, you know, those guys. But yeah, but I'm biased towards the Big East, man.
What do you think when you see Syracuse go to the ACC? What's going on there?
That's corny. I tell Red all the time. I say, man, y'all corny. What you doing? What you doing in the ACC? But it's a people don't understand. It's a business, and that's all because of football.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with basketball. It's all because of football because Syracuse has a big time football program as well.
So how does that factor into the decision to go to the ACC?
Money. Simple fact, because football generates more money than basketball.
Okay.
So that's why they're in the ACC. It's not because they wanted to. The commissioner said, yo, we going into – that was a football decision. It had nothing to do with basketball. Gotcha. That's why UConn went to the AC – the American Conference?
Yes.
It was because of football. But it wasn't working because their football team is not that good. So what did the UConn do?
They came
back to the Big East. Because UConn basketball probably generate more money than UConn football. Trust me when I tell you. Mm-hmm. So it always comes down to money, mm-hmm. those kind of decisions. Yeah.
What'd you think when you saw your former teammate Eric Williams on Basketball Wives that first year? Eric Williams, husband of Jennifer Williams.
Listen, people ask me about that all the time.
Yeah?
Me and Eric I was Eric Rohde. You know, Eric was with me when he came for the visit. He was with me.
Okay.
So the reason they got Eric was because of me. Because
you sold him.
I sold him. And Eric came. That's not Eric, man. People don't understand. Eric, they have producers. And you are in this business. Producers tell people what to say, how to say it. They chop it up. Reality TV ain't real. That's all I'm going to say. And women today, that was your teammate. Oh, my God. Eric is the nicest guy, man. People don't understand. He's one of the nicest guys around. Real, real good guy. I remember when my wife first met him. I don't like him. Why did he do that? So we had an event, alumni event at Providence. I took my wife down. And she said, he's a nice guy. I said, that's TV. And, you know, she got a chance to meet him, talk to him. And said, oh, he's not like that's. He is nothing like that.
How's he doing? Because you hear stories about how these guys, or what are they up to?
Everything you see in the media is not always what it is. He's actually doing really well. We talk periodically because he's actually a farmer now. He's upstate New York, and he does farming. That's what he does.
Good for him.
That's his business. He's doing really well. He's doing well for himself. All of my guys are doing well for themselves, you know, that I know of. I know Austin is doing well out in L.A. Mm-hmm. I know Dickie's doing well. Michael is doing well, you know. And if guys weren't doing well or they needed help, that's why we're their teammates.
The brotherhood.
And we would help them, and we would do whatever we need to do to help our brother. We don't want to see your brother struggling or with anything, whether it's financially or emotionally or whatever's going on. One of my best teammates, Troy Brown, we talk every day. Mm-hmm. Troy's crazy. Mm-hmm. Calls me 5 a.m. Rob, wake up. But that's my guy. So, you know, that's some guy I talk to all the time. Me and Dickie talk all the time. Me and Mike talk periodically. Talk to Eric all the time. Eric is in Jersey, so... Yeah. You know, I talked to my other teammate, Jason Murdoch. Mm-hmm. That's Eric's cousin. Like, we are very... Jamel Thomas. Now, I didn't play with Jamel, but we talk all the time. Jamel used to watch me in high school. So I watched Jamel. Jamel's younger than me.
Okay.
So I talked to Jamel, Sham, all of it. That Providence crew is tight. You know, so I would say Providence was a great choice for me. I loved it. It was a great
What's your basketball. Relationship like with some of the more current players, like Marshawn Brooks and stuff? Have you guys been able to... I guess bridge the gap.
When we do alumni events and we get together, we cool, we talk. But though I'm much older than those guys.
Yeah.
But the guys that I really talk to is like Jamel, you know, Sham, you know, of course Dickie and Austin and all those are more my era guys. But when we do get together, it's very cordial. It's all love. We're friars. We're Providence guys. Mm. But you know, I'm pretty much connected with my era of guys.
With the bonds and the brotherhood you speak of, now as a coach at Bedford, how can a coach help to facilitate this in a team environment, to create those lifelong bonds for these kids, help to kind of like facilitate and push them in that direction?
Great question. What we do is we do things outside. I do it every year. We're actually getting ready to plan an event right now. But we do things outside of basketball. We do bowling. Mm-hmm. They have movie night. They do video game night. These are the things that I've done over the years. Mm-hmm. And you know who does these events for me? I don't have anything to do with it. My parents.
What?
My parents organize the event. We're getting ready to do a bowling event or something. Something just to get them together without basketball. And I tell my parents, I say, you guys are gonna organize and do the event. I'm hands off. Just tell me when and where and I'll be there. So I let the parents organize. I have great parents. Over the years, I've had great parents. Yeah. And I leave that up to them.
You got them signing contracts, Rob. They
yeah, you know, so yeah, so exactly. So they do all of that. At every end of the year, we do a nice banquet where they do. Let me give a big shout out to Greenberg's Bagel right here. I don't know if you guys ever heard of. Go to Greenberg's Bagel. They look out for Bedford Academy all the time. They always give us pizza. They give us wings. They give us bagels for the staff. Everything. Wow. We do a pizza and wing night with them, and they're great. My guy Julian, his name is Julian. Gotcha. Don't go there saying Rob said give us some free. Go there, y'all support them. But they look out for Bedford Academy.
For sure.
So and it's right down the street from Bedford, right on Bedford. If y'all don't know, look up Greenberg's Bagel. They have really good stuff there.
And do you feel like you see the impact of these events on the court?
Definitely. It keeps them together. Mm-hmm. So we're going through that. We got a lot of young guys this year, a lot of young guys. And they, you know, sometimes they bicker and all of that. So these events help them to build. It's a lot of good team bonding stuff. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with young players and anybody that coach, they know it could be rough. Right now we're hitting a rough patch because we got some guys out and we got a lot of young guys. So, you know, it's going to be good. It's going to help us in the long run. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about molding a leader from a group? You know what I'm saying? You talked about, what was it, Brent Jones?
Yes, yes.
You know, that was your floor general. Yep. He may be one of one, but each year we need somebody to merge.
Yes.
How can a coach help to kind of mold a leader in a basketball team?
First thing, it has to be recognized. It's hard to say, okay, you're my leader today.
Yeah.
No, it got to be a kid with those kind of qualities. I have a kid right now. He's a young kid. He's going to be that. He's going to be that leader for me beyond the older guys. He's a young kid with a high level of maturity, works extremely hard, a gym rat, very, very dedicated. And I'm going to say his name, Dakota Harrison. He's a sophomore. Mm-hmm. He's that guy. But not only on the court, he has a 96 GPA.
Wow.
So he's doing it on and off the court. He's in the building and you don't even know he's there. Wow. All the teachers love him. Everybody loves this kid. Right off the bat, that's my leader. I already know.
As a sophomore?
As a sophomore. He's the guy. Yes, he's this guy. You saw him in the summer.
What's that mean for the seniors? There room for resentment there?
Nah, y'all had your chance. I'm keeping it real.
Keep it real,
you had your chance. You had your chance to step up. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. We appreciate your seniorship or whatever you want to call it. But this kid, you saw him in the summer. You probably didn't even recognize it. Mm-hmm. But this is the kid. Great leader, and he's doing it on and off the court.
There you go.
You know, and what more can you ask for? And that's the kid that I'm chosen. Because not just for now, he's a sophomore. So junior, think about it, senior, and then when all those other kids are coming in, he's going to pull them. Nah, Coach Phelps, don't go that way.
Yeah.
Nah, this is how you got to do it. And that's the difference. Because my seniors that I have right now, they're not really the most vocal guys.
Yeah.
This kid is vocal, and he's vocal in the right way. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not a yeller screamer. He'll pull him aside, look you in the eye. This is what Coach Phelps said to do. That's the kid.
Yeah. Because I think every team needs one.
Oh, yeah.
And a coach should kind of maybe, if they can, that's why I want to ask you the method.
Yeah, yeah.
Devote time to try to mold one.
Yes.
Give them responsibilities and stuff. Because as you mentioned, that player will keep others in check. A lot of stuff that happens with a basketball team shouldn't even make it to your door, or your desk.
I say that. Yo, great point. I shouldn't know this stuff. Some of the things that happens, I should not know because the leaders already nipped it.
Yeah.
They already policed each other, and it's already taken care of. And I should probably be here on the back end. Oh, that happened? Listen, everything that goes on with my team, I know.
Yeah.
Which I'm supposed to know anyway. Right. But like you said, some things I could say, I know Dakota got it. We're good. You know, Dakota's going to take care of that. Or such and such is going to take care of that. Or, you know, whoever the leader on your team, they're going to take care of that. Yeah. That's how it should be. The coach don't have to be involved in everything. Single thing.
Yeah.
I tell them that. I say, guys, some things I don't even want to know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Keep me out of it. You know, but I think he's going to be that kid for me.
Gotcha. What's the relationship with N1?
Oh, well, I had a great one with them. You know, I was with them for like 5 or 6 years, and they really did a lot for for Bedford Academy. I'm far as, you know, just we had an overabundance of shoes. And the great thing that they was doing with them, that if I brought in other schools, they would give other shoes to the community.
Wow.
We had a great relationship, and they really took care of us. But once COVID hit,
yes,
it messed everything up because they was losing, you know, they were already losing money, mm-hmm. but they were really losing money. So they called me down. They was like, listen, Rob, we love you. We love everything you did. You bought a lot of stuff to help out, but we just can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Thank you. No problem. Things come back up. Please call me. It's all about relationships and how you end things. I'm not going to go, oh, man, y'all some suckers. How y'all going to do? No, you can't. They took care of us for 6 years. Yeah. And, I mean, the stuff they was giving, I was making sure. I gave it to middle schools. I helped everybody out. Yeah. But, you know, it's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. So now I'm building relationships with other companies, you know. And hopefully we'll get another deal. We're not like Bud and them where they get all the good stuff. But and I'll say this about Bud. Whenever there's an opportunity, me and Bud will talk, and he'll say, Rob, maybe if I can't do this, but here, call this guy or do this. Like, with the whole, our team is wearing Pumas. Bud helped me with that.
Dope.
You know, so I may say, yo, I don't have nothing right now, but do this.
Dope.
Me and Bud go back 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, people see me and Bud arguing at each other. They don't know we go back 30 or 40 years. Yeah. Me and Bud knew each other for years.
That's what it's supposed to be about, you know? Community. We can compete and stuff, but still got to be honorable, still have a community that we could at least rely on and pull resources from.
Yes.
That's dope, man. I love to hear that. 2022-2023 Bedford Panthers. What could we expect the second half of the season? What do you want people to know about your team?
That we are a hardworking team, that we really build all about character. Mm-hmm. And that may not always be wins, mm-hmm. but we're going to go out there, give our best effort. We're going through a little hurdle right now because we got some injuries mm-hmm. of things that's going on. But I actually just met with the team today because we had practice and just how we overcome adversity. Because mm-hmm. I always told them when we was winning, it was all good. Mm-hmm. So now what about when we starting to hit a little bump? Well, you know, we can't fall apart. You know, you can't break down. And it's time for other guys to step up. So I just think the second half, once we get healthy, I think we're going to be all right again. It's just right now we're going through a little rough patch because we got a lot of injuries. And guys need to take care of what they need to take care of in the classroom.
All right, man. Rob Phelps, keep doing what you do.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you. And like I said, you do a great job, man. Excellent podcast. If you guys can get out, support this brother. Doing a great job.
Trying, man.